WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The federal government shut down. House Speaker Mike Johnson says it's the fault of congressional Democrats.
44 Senate Democrats voted to reject a clean, nonpartisan continuing funding resolution to keep the United States government open. The Democrats said instead that they wanted to give health care to illegal aliens instead of keeping critical services provided for the American citizens.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says that's just not true.
Federal law prohibits the use of Medicare, Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, and the Affordable Care Act to provide health insurance in any way, shape, or form to undocumented immigrants. Period. Full stop. That's the law. And Democrats aren't trying to change that.
He says Democrats are holding out for health care subsidies that will go to millions of U.S. citizens. Walmart today says it plans to remove synthetic food dyes from its store brands by January 2027. 69 people killed in a strong earthquake in the Philippines. This is ABC News.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. A proposed bill seeking to push back the enforcement date of recently adopted building codes was heard in a state assembly committee this week. The legislation was proposed by a group of Republican lawmakers and seeks to delay the start of enforcement until April of 2026. Enforcement was originally scheduled to begin on Wednesday, but the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services pushed that deadline back to November 1st amid concerns from the construction industry over inflation, workforce shortages, and supply chain issues. A recent report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that the state's alcohol-induced death rate is declining, but still remains above pre-pandemic levels. According to the report, nearly 1,100 Wisconsin residents died due to alcohol-induced causes in 2024. The state's alcohol-induced mortality rate was 18.2 per 100,000 residents, significantly higher than the national average of 13.9 last year. In 2019, the state's alcohol-induced mortality rate was only 14.9 per 100,000 residents. The Barron Electric Cooperative's Board of Directors has approved the return of over $1.2 million to over 16,000 current and former members through cashback credits. Checks will be distributed at a pair of Cooperative Month events that will be held on October 7th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Barron Electric's office in Spooner and October 9th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Barron Electric's office in Barron. Members who are unable to attend one of the events will get the remaining checks mailed to them by the end of October. A Comstock woman was arrested over the weekend after allegedly driving her vehicle into a Polk County lake while operating under the influence. According to the Wisconsin State Patrol, 37-year-old Emily Jean Stowell was charged with first offense operating a motor vehicle under the influence in relation to the crash, which occurred on Saturday at around 12:30 a.m. According to their preliminary investigation, authorities say Stowell was driving northbound on County Line Street when she veered off the road and crashed into the lake. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers reevaluate. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers having their bye week. After losing to the Browns last week, how are they reacting to Sunday night's game with the Cowboys ending in a tie? Head coach Matt LaFleur.
Right now, it feels like kind of like a kick in the gut. It definitely feels more like a loss than anything else. I think what's disappointing is when you have opportunities to win games, which we had an opportunity in both games to win the game. And when you don't win the game, it's disappointing.
College football, following losses to Alabama and Maryland, the Wisconsin Badgers head to Michigan on Saturday. Luke Fickell.
We know we have to get better. There's a process to getting better. We have to see some of those steps to getting better. But there's no way of doing it if you can't stay together and you can't keep your mind in a going in a direction. I can always say positive, but going in a direction that gives us a chance to get better.
That's the Badgers head coach Luke Fickell with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yankee here. You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop back into the 50s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, a little breezier, partly cloudy to mostly sunny with a high in the upper 70s to near 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Actor, writer, and my son, Joe Schwabba. Do you have a favorite one-hit wonder song, Joe?
I don't know. That's not great radio.
30
I'm
seconds.
Right now.
What does the Fox say? We grew up kind of in the same era, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what does the Fox say? Or Gundam Style?
Oh, those are terrible.
That's another one. Oh, whatever.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, should the government bail out our farmers because of the tariff policies instituted by our government? We talked to Darren Von Rudin in hour number 2. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
One more hour from the Lake Wissota studio before we start a little road trip for the next few days. Looking forward to joining you as I do a little bit of traveling here. But from up here in Chippewa Falls, it's nice to have you along across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Wednesday morning, first day of October. First day for some big news up here in the 7th Congressional District. Tom Tiffany, the incumbent Republican congressman, has decided to run for governor. That has opened up this congressional district. It's an open race right now, and people are beginning to position themselves for a run on the Democratic and Republican sides. And we will be breaking a little news about the 7th Congressional District 2026 election coming up starting less than a half hour from now, 8:35. So you're going to want to come on back and hear what we have to say about big news up north. We've got Earl Ingram standing by as well to tell us about the What's Going On podcast that he can get you at civicmedia.us. First, a note that we'd love to have you sign up for our Up North News daily newsletter. Head to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the banner on top of the homepage. In today's edition, there's a link to my story about the new backdoor abortion ban that is in place. Planned Parenthood has stopped providing abortion services, at least temporarily, in Wisconsin. Because it turns out that in Donald Trump's big bloated boondoggle, there's also a provision in there that halts all Medicaid funding to Planned Parenthood, even for their non-abortion health services. And that's going to take away a lot of funding for things like, basic physicals and blood tests and STD screening and early detection of cancer and all the many, many things that Planned Parenthood does. So it's being challenged in court, but until then, essentially you have a backdoor abortion ban in place in the United States, at least here in Wisconsin, from Planned Parenthood. And details you can find over in our newsletter, again, upnorthnewswi.com. And in our Sunday morning newsletter, our question of the week is about the government shutdown, which started overnight at midnight. And how does this thing end? Do Democrats cave in and just accept all of these massive cuts that Republicans want? Or do they use their leverage and win the restoration of some of those cuts, either with the president caving in or with Republicans and Democrats coming up with something together and even overriding a Donald Trump veto? So where's this thing going? What's your best guess? That's our question of the week. And you get the first look at it by signing up for our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. At 8:09, let's welcome in Earl Ingram from the What's Going On podcast. You can get that over at civicmedia.us, and we'll talk more about what's on the show, but certainly some of the other matters that are happening, not the least of which are some of the cuts that come from Trump's big bloated boondoggle. Earl, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing fine as well. But, you know, we explained in the last hour, again, we just talked about cuts to Planned Parenthood. We've talked about cuts to training special education teachers. We've talked about cuts to deaf-blind students. Again, all in the name of attacking DEI, because apparently helping special education kids and helping kids who are deaf and blind is somehow special treatment. And you've got experience with some of these things that are going to be cut as well.
Well, thanks again, Pat, for the opportunity. But my wife and I are treatment foster parents. We took in a disabled child 22 years ago, who was born with half a brain, who requires 24-hour care. That young boy that we took in is now a 24-year-old man who still requires 24-hour care. He will his entire life. He doesn't have the capacity to live on his own. And so through Medicaid and some programs inside of that, it helps us in trying to offer this young man the best quality of life that he can possibly get. He could be institutionalized, which is one of the reasons why they created programs to give these special people an opportunity at the best possible lives they could have. And right now, under the big, beautiful bill, there are major cuts that are looming to many of these programs. And I just don't think people are really aware of the impacts of the big, beautiful bill and what is coming down the pike. And so if you know, are fortunate enough that you don't have to be involved with Medicaid and those kinds of things, then count yourself as being fortunate and lucky. But there are many people who that's the only lifeline that they have. And our nation ought to be ashamed of itself if we allow these kinds of things to happen to people who are already up against it because of through no fault of their own being born in the manner that they have been.
Well, and that's the thing here is we're not talking about preference based on somebody's condition. We're talking about dignity based on somebody's condition and making sure that, you know, they have either the opportunity to live, the opportunity to be healthy, the opportunity to be educated. There's nobody that's giving them some kind of an extra advantage. These are the things that we think we would like to do if it was happening right in front of us, you know, right on the street corner. But thankfully, these folks don't have to live on a street corner when we have programs like these that can take care of them. And so it defies any easy explanation. It's either a lack of caring and compassion for folks who have disabilities, and or it is such an immense sense of greed that you will literally, you know, take money, take food off people's tables to pay for tax cuts for the very well off and hope that those benevolent billionaires will somehow take care of you. I don't know if I feel like it's one or the other. It feels like a little bit of both, Earl.
Well, when it's been characterized as a handout, and so when people hear a handout right away without knowing anything about it, they've been led to believe that they're just takers. And so they put this group of people, disabled people, in the category of takers. And you know, it's dreadful to think about where we're going with this. There's nowhere else to turn. So what do? We cast these people out, and those of us who have dedicated our lives to taking on a tremendous responsibility to try to give people, as you stated so well, dignity in their lives. So those of us who are doing this work, we're going to be left to kind of handle this on our own. I think it's just nonsensical.
That's putting it mildly. We're talking to Earl Ingram. You can learn more about the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast at civicmedia.us/shows. I want to say one more thing about this whole notion of handouts. And we may have touched on this previously, but I think it bears repeating, because I always use the example of Ronald Reagan's so-called welfare queens and talking about waste, fraud, and abuse. And we're hearing that again this week, all the waste, fraud, and abuse that's out there. Waste, fraud, and abuse are already illegal or against the rules. There are already ways to sniff it out, to deny benefits, to prosecute people. So if you really believed that something like that was going on, you'd go after those folks. And I admit, it only takes one person, one example of somebody abusing the system, for other people to get cynical and think, oh, everybody must be living high off the hog that way. There's always going to be people that try to game the system, but this is just the worst case of throwing the baby out with the bathwater because you don't like how a couple of people benefit from this program.
Well, if you want to talk about waste, fraud, and abuse on the grandest level, look at our military budget. And there's no comparison with the dollars that are being abused and wasted on that level than there are with people who are in these other programs. The other thing I wanted to talk about quickly in one of the latest podcasts is the street takeovers that are taking place across this nation. And what they are, for people who aren't aware, is they, at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, a group of young people think it makes sense to organize and pull into some of the busiest intersections of our city and basically just have a party at 3 o'clock in the morning with cars, powerful cars, doing donuts, fireworks, drinking, smoking weed, and doing all sorts of illegal things. 300-400 people gathered. They do this thing via the internet, and it's more than what cities can handle. And so we had a discussion about that on the latest podcast about what is it about the generation that thinks this makes sense. And so I had a discussion with my producer, who is from the generation of young people who are doing these kind of things, to try to get an understanding of what their mindset really is.
Well, I hope that he was able to shed some light on it, because look, we all go through that age range, and we all do things that we look back on and think they were a combination of rebellious and stupid. But it takes it to a different level when you're endangering people by doing what you do on city streets and in intersections, especially with law enforcement that is already running on tight budgets and everything. So again, I don't pretend to know what the alternatives are on this, but I don't know that it's something you just hope everybody gets tired of it and moves on to something else. It's a bigger problem than that, it seems.
Well, when he kind of told me about influencers, and at the root of all of it is influencers, and so this is the insanity of it. People do this to get people to follow them, and they become famous people for being influencers, for whatever that means. But it certainly doesn't make any sense.
No, but it goes back to, from the earliest days of television. Everybody wants to be on TV. Everybody wants to be on a screen, and they're willing to go along with pretty much anything. And I tell you, one of the words in the social media era I wish had never come along was challenge, because we always hear about the blank challenge. And next thing you know, somebody's either ingested too much of something and died, or they've engaged in some kind of an extreme selfie and they've died, or whatever influencers are doing to attract crowds now, that can lead to, again, disruptions of lives and much worse. So I'm looking forward to the discussion that you're having. It's part of the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast. Get the details over at civicmedia.us. Click on shows and you'll learn more about it. Earl, I appreciate you bringing some insight to this very much, and to the budget cuts as well, and look forward to chatting with you next week. Thanks for the visit.
Always great to talk to you.
All right. Thank you, Earl, very much. Again, the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast, you can find it at civicmedia.us/shows. A local news update is coming up next for some of you. Others will catch my conversation with Melissa Baldoff for our weekly climate check and talking about the Trump administration making a big investment this week in green energy. No. And going back to coal. Yeah, for real. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Big Fish Golf Club in Hayward is teeing it up with the goal for the green and gold text to win on WBZH, the Buzz of the North. Say my name, Big G, and slice $20 off your next round, now through October 31st.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities than 25 years ago, according to FBI and Justice Department data. In 2023, cities with 250,000 or more people reported 771 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, down from 1,093 in 2000. Nationally, violent crime has stayed below 400 incidents per 100,000 residents for a decade, compared to about 500 in the late 1990s. Pew Research reported a 49% drop in violent crime, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, since 1993. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club-level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay.
Big Fish Golf Club in Hayward is teeing it up with the goal for the green and gold text to win on WBZH, the Buzz of the North. Say my name, Big G, and slice $20 off your next round, now through October 31st.
Step right up. Circus history is alive in Wisconsin.
The circus would come to town and whole cities would shut down. There wouldn't be school. The stores would be closed because everybody would go to the circus.
A big part of the circus, the wagons, and now what's believed to be the last bell wagon anywhere is at Circus World in Baraboo. Commissioned by the Ringlings in 1892, this 10,000-pound rolling musical instrument was the crown jewel of the circus parades.
There's parade wagons. Circus parades would happen to get people excited to come see the circus, and so those are the very ornamented ones, lots of carving.
That's Jennifer Kronk. She's the curator of history at Circus World. Three other unique wagons owned by Feld Entertainment in Florida are also on loan for the next couple of years. It's a slice of Wisconsin and circus history right here, where you can relive the glory of the parade and echo of the bells calling you to the big top. I'm Terry Barr.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WBZH. I'm Mark Lundeen, and here's what's happening in Hayward today. With me in the studio today is Mark Berquist, the superintendent of schools for the Hayward School District. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So one of the things that some of our schools are dealing with, not just in Hayward, but nationwide, is some of the reports of school shootings and other major events that are happening. And we even had one here locally, not to speak about those things, but talk about how the Hayward School District is prepared and continuing to prepare for incidences.
Well, a couple of things. Anytime we have a safety issue, there's just a set of protocols that we go through. We get information. Sometimes a student will pass it to a teacher, and that'll make its way up the chain to either admin or straight to law enforcement. And that process is really fairly quick. And as soon as there is information out there about a safety concern, it's dealt with immediately. And in our case, one thing that we'll do is go either address it directly with the student, or if there's a location, we'll seek that out right away. And then we determine, is it credible, is it not credible? If it's a non-credible issue, certainly it just goes into that bucket of, hey, we've investigated, nothing to see here. If it is a credible issue, just to give everyone a heads up with that process, we continue to investigate and find out where things are, talk to people until we have a handle on that situation.
Yeah.
If we feel there's something going on that we're unsure of, we'll go into the safety protocols that we have in place with getting kids inside rooms or whatever we choose is the right path there until we feel confident. And invariably, we're going to continue that process until things are safe. And once we give the all clear, rest assured that there's a reason for that, and we're back to education as normal.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we're barely into the school year, and I think our calendar is already looking at the end of a quarter, end of October, I think we've looked at it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think we're at some point going to be talking about the end of the first quarter. I think it's October the 31st. Before we get there, we kind of just want to highlight mid-quarters coming up. And I think October 6th and the 8th, parent-teacher conferences. And so sometimes if we don't start those soon enough, you know, we don't get those relationships built up. If a kid is struggling in something, if we wait too long, maybe it doesn't give us time to fix it. So October 6th, October 8th, good time to come into the schools, meet your teachers if you haven't done so already, and kind of get a heads up on how those things are going, and get things turned around if necessary. But it's also a great time to come in and just hear about all the great things the kids are doing, because it's happening, man. Yeah. We got people doing some great things.
Yeah, a lot of really neat stuff happening there. Fall sports?
Yeah, it's cranking. Our football team, I think, has got 4 games in already. I know our boys' soccer has been playing for a while. I think I talked to the golf coach. Girls' golf is next week into conference and regional play after that. So some of these things are deep into their sports seasons already. I know there's a choir concert coming up here fairly soon. Veterans Day for sure is coming up. I believe our band at the high school is doing sectionals. There's stuff all over the place. Our kids have so many opportunities, which is just fantastic. And not only school activities, but some of the things out in the community. There's a mountain biking team. There's other things that aren't necessarily school related, but still benefit our kids.
How are things moving along with the extension service and the usage of the extra facilities that are at the high school?
Yeah, so Tamarack Health Center is trying to come off their summer hours. That we've now had about a year in of how that's being used by the community. I think we've made a few changes during the weekend. We've prolonged those. I think they used to shut down like 7 to 11 a.m. It was open, and I think we've now opened that up to 7 o'clock a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. There was just a need for it. The evening hours, maybe we trimmed an hour here off. I think that shuts down at 8 p.m. But we're seeing, a good uptick in community use as we go from that summertime into the fall. And encourage people to come out and take a look and see what there is to offer. It's a great facility.
And I know the extension calendar is getting quite busy from what I've seen there. So a lot of different activities happening. Fall productions, have any grasp of what's happening maybe at the intermediate school level?
And I know we have Veterans Day is kind of a big thing where there's a program at some of the younger schools. And that is a neat thing where, those kids are able to put those programs on and the veterans come in. And it's such a neat event that does honor some people that truly deserve it.
Anything come up at the board meeting? We just recently had a school board meeting. Anything in those discussions that looking forward towards the end of this year or into next school year?
We're taking a look at our Northern Waters school. And there's a need maybe for some facility upgrades, and that would all be done through fundraising at this point. So if you hear some talk about an upgrade at the Northern Water School, yeah, it's something we're looking into. And we've met with Krauss Anderson, the same group that has done our other referendum work.
Yeah.
And they're giving us some options to at least look into. And then that would be funded not through... Not through the regular budget process, but it would be funded through fundraising type activities.
As a space expansion or utility
improvements? Yeah, that whole school is really heavy on equipment, and storage is a major concern. And they're starting to kind of outgrow that space a little bit. So it's something that we're entertaining, at least as an idea. That's just one avenue we're taking a look at.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you for stopping in and giving us a little update, and we'll definitely be looking forward to some more updates coming up in October.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
For more information about the Hayward Community School District, visit their website at hayward.k12.com.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 96.9 WBZH.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is encouraging hunters to share their passion for the sport with the next generation during this year's Youth Deer Hunt. The annual event will be held on October 11th and 12th, offering hunters 15 and younger the chance to learn hunting techniques in a less crowded environment than the traditional 9-day gun deer hunt season. Youth hunters will be eligible to hunt under a mentor's supervision. Mentors must be at least 18 years old, have a current license, and have completed a hunter education course. The Wisconsin Better Business Bureau is encouraging residents to take advantage of the services it offers following severe weather occurrences. Organization officials say scams are becoming increasingly common in the wake of severe weather and natural disasters as scammers seek to take advantage of struggling residents. They're encouraging residents to visit their Natural Disaster HQ webpage to learn about some common post-storm scams like contractors offering quick fixes, price gouging for high-demand items, or disaster relief fundraising campaigns. The City of Duluth is seeking feedback from the community on city services and priorities. City officials opened a survey last week in partnership with the University of Minnesota Duluth and the Bureau of Business and Economic Research. Their goal is to gather feedback from residents to inform future investments and policy decisions. Any Duluth resident aged 18 or older is invited to participate in the survey, which can be found online. Responses in the survey are confidential, and only one response is allowed per resident. Washburn County is seeking applicants to serve as the new zoning administrator. According to a press release, the zoning administrator will be responsible for enforcing county zoning ordinances and other state and federal regulations, including subdivision control, floodplain zoning, and private wastewater treatment system regulations. The position also involves issuing permits as well as assisting and educating residents about the zoning code. More information on the position and the application can be found on the Washburn County website. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Have you heard of Tilly Norwood? If not, you probably will be hearing more about this AI actress in the near future. AI is becoming more of an issue in the entertainment business. It was a big point of contention during the recent Screen Actors Guild strike. Tilly is the creation of Aline Vandervelden, a Dutch actor, director, and physicist. That's a rare combo. She is the founder of Particle 6, a video production company that makes AI. Vandervelden says Tilly is even being looked at by acting agencies for representation and has her own Instagram account, the AI with the IA. As you can imagine, the Hollywood acting community is not happy about this creation. According to Yahoo News, the Screen Actors Guild says Tilly is not a real actor, as she has no real-life experiences to draw from, and that AI devalues human artistry. My question is Tilly really even a she? Not sure if she can be compared to a real actor or if she is more like animation. This will get more interesting and or contentious real soon, folks. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 96.9 WBZH.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with a high in the mid-70s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop back into the 50s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, a little breezier, partly cloudy to mostly sunny with a high in the upper 70s to near 80. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 58.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We don't always agree politically, but Bill McCosh.
Thanks for having me. You want to talk Brewers first?
It's been a really special season, and it's not whether you're wearing red or blue hats. It's yellow and blue.
How do you come together in politics? This is one of the ways.
Yeah.
Find some common ground, and then expand on that. And then you got to listen to the other side.
Our neighbors are not our enemies. We can disagree politically, but still find ways to bring our community together.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Heather Williams, she's president of the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee.
We have our spotlight races. We share them on our website. You can head to dlcc.org, and they are excellent places for people who want to get involved and, frankly, who know that we are not going to win this election on vibes. Like, we have to get out and do the work, and we must communicate with our neighbors, with our community. We must show up for people. Not only do they deserve it, but they expect it.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Civic Media host Greg Bach joins me to discuss the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. Then Civic Media's Catherine Lake talks about a big movie screening in Madison, and actor Dan Davies drops by. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
The decision by Congressman Tom Tiffany to run for governor means there will now be an open race for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, which takes up a good chunk of the northern third of Wisconsin. It was represented by Dave Obie for 40-some years, Sean Duffy after that, and Tom Tiffany currently. But with him running for governor, it opens it up with Republicans and Democrats talking amongst themselves about who should be running and who could serve as the next member of Congress from up north. One of the people who's been doing a lot of talking about that, a lot of traveling, connecting with people, is actually a former legislator from the Baraboo area, but who relocated to northern Wisconsin a number of years ago. And I mean, if you want to know about the North Woods, you got to talk to a guy that really knows woods, and nobody knows the woods like Fred Clark. He is a senior forester. He has served as a senior forester with the Department of Natural Resources, as an ecologist with the Nature Conservancy. He's been a consulting forester. He has served on the Wisconsin Council on Forestry, the Wisconsin Council on Tourism, briefly on the State Natural Resources Board. He knows a thing or two about how to make sure that the North Woods is good for business, is good for tourism, and is good to our resources. And maybe it's time that the North Woods is good for representation in Congress as well. So Fred Clark joins us now to tell us more about what's happening in the 7th. Fred, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Pat. Really good to see you. It's a wonderful morning here in the fall in the North Woods.
It really is. And so, I mean, nobody understands the task ahead like you, and I'm sure that other people have expressed interest in this as well. But where did you ultimately come down on your own decision about what to do in the 7th District?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. You know, I spent a good part of this summer with some friends just traveling the 7th Congressional District. And as most of your listeners know, it's a huge district. This is about a third of Wisconsin, our entire North Woods, parts of 26 counties. And we just wanted to, after talking among ourselves and following all of the drama coming out of Washington, we just decided to get on the road and try to put a pulse on what people were thinking about and talking about. We went to Marshfield and to Wausau and Merrill and Tomahawk and Rhinelander and Hayward and Spooner and Webster and Hudson. Had a lot of conversations with a lot of people to figure out what concerns are sort of rising to the top for the communities around northern Wisconsin, and what people are looking for out of representation. And this is at a time when Congressman Tom Tiffany was basically missing in action. He was not holding public events. Some of these really momentous decisions, like the big billionaire's bill that came out of Washington that he voted for, he simply wasn't willing to stand up and account for himself in public. And we learned a lot from those trips, and it really helped me, after a lot of thought, make a decision that I think the time is right to stand up and make the case for new representation in Congress in northern Wisconsin.
So you're in.
I'm in. The candidacy starts today.
All right. It's, you've done some of the prep work already. There's a website up, clark4wi.com. Again, clark4wi.com, where people are going to learn more about you and more about the issues. I gave a bit of an introduction that stressed your forestry roots, but you did serve a number of years in the legislature. And so tell us a bit more about, you know, your time there and the priorities that you brought to Madison that you'd now like to bring to Washington.
Sure. Thanks for asking. You know, for many years, I lived in Baraboo, a town in Sauk County, north of Madison. From there, I ran a forestry consulting and contracting business. In fact, one of my very first jobs, my first year in business, was marking timber up here for the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest. But in that work, I just became more and more involved in conservation as well as community leadership. And in 2008, I took a long shot and ran for the state assembly seat that includes the communities of Baraboo and Portage and Montello, perfect farm and forest country. I'd never had a political background before, but again, it was an opportunity for me to learn more and provide service to an important community that really meant a lot to me. I won a Republican-held seat. I did that with a lot of crossover voters from Republicans and Democrats who knew that it was time for a change and that they could trust me to help represent their values and their interests, even if we didn't agree on every issue. And I learned a tremendous amount from that effort, the most important one being, if you're elected as a representative, it's your job to represent everybody. It doesn't matter how they voted, doesn't matter if they agree with you on everything, but there are lots of issues at home that we all have to work together on if we're gonna be successful. And I took that to heart, and I'll take it to heart for Northern Wisconsin.
It certainly seems to be a message that would resonate right now in what is now the ninth hour of a shutdown of the federal government brought about by an unwillingness by the majority party to negotiate, even though they need Democratic votes to get anything done. So I'm sure with this shutdown, people would be asking, what would you do differently? What is it? What traits would you bring that might make it less likely that we see government shutdowns?
Yeah, the choice of Democrats right now is a very tough one, but I don't fault them for standing up. When you look at the brutal impact on middle class people across this country from a single policy of removing the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, that's going to affect healthcare for millions of people. This is really their only point of leverage right now, but fundamentally, we've got to relook at how we budget and run the federal government. There is simply no reason that we should be going through this shutdown drama every 4 years when the parties can't agree on the most basic responsibility, which is how to run our governments. So I think we need to relook at the principles and procedures for federal budgeting. And that's the most basic thing we should be expecting from our Congress. We expect that from our state legislature. And for the most part, we get it.
Do the basics of funding then extend to putting a priority on things like healthcare rather than billionaire tax breaks? I guess what I'm saying is, you know, right now, the Democrats in Congress are saying, look, negotiate with us if you need our votes, because we think you've gone too far in these healthcare cuts. And if you want our votes, they've got to be, you know, restored or pared back. And Republicans are even refusing to negotiate. I don't think I have to go very hard to find out whether you think Congress should be taking more of its energy on providing for people's health care than providing for tax cuts for the rich.
It's incredible. You know, health care wasn't perfect a year ago. We still had a long way to go to provide the opportunity for basic health care for everyone, regardless of income. But the big, beautiful bill, as the president liked to call it, has a massive across the board impact on both the Medicaid cuts that are going to affect healthcare for the people who need it the most, as well as the Affordable Care Act subsidy removals, which is going to increase healthcare premiums by up to 75% or more for many people that are on the exchanges and the Affordable Care Act. That's a mass, the most massive transfer of wealth to billionaires that's ever occurred in the history of our federal government and our federal budgets. No, it's not acceptable. And no, Democrats should, no one should be voting to support a budget that fails Americans so badly and broadly.
We're talking to Fred Clark, former state assembly rep, who is now the Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, all across the northern third of Wisconsin here. And let's get to the district itself and the things that proper representation can do for it. You've got an entire platform based on rebuilding the rural economy around, you know, our lakes and our forests and our towns. And we know that Tom Tiffany, as a congressman and prior to that in the state legislature, had the primary goal of getting mines operating in Wisconsin and expanding development that way. Okay, that's one mindset, is mining and development. Where's yours in terms of making sure that the rural economy across northern Wisconsin can be vibrant during your time in office?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. You know, so let's just look at what we have here in the north. The forests, the lakes, the rivers, the farms that make up this kind of piece of our world. You know, this is iconic Wisconsin. When the Department of Tourism wants to sell Wisconsin to out-of-state visitors, the North Woods is one of the major places that they go. If we want to maintain that, which also means maintaining the quality of life and the clean water and the clean air and the outdoor spaces that make this place what it is, we have to invest in that. From an economic development standpoint, we can chase big mines, you know, big holes in the ground. We can chase massive international businesses that we think are going to plop down, you know, big data centers and create jobs. But I think time after time and a lot of effort and experience has shown that you get a better bang for your buck by investing in local communities, local businesses, the sort of small and medium-sized businesses and the small farms and the forestry enterprises that are the bulk of employment and economic activity in northern Wisconsin. That's where we need to be making our investments. And as a policymaker, that's where I would absolutely reinvest and increase our investment to make sure that the businesses that are already here are able to thrive.
What about in terms of the trade war that Donald Trump has imposed on this country and on this economy, ostensibly to rebuild or, you know, help out American manufacturing? To what degree do you feel like that is the right track or wrong track?
Oh, if you talk to farmers today throughout the Midwest, but including in Wisconsin, the trade war and this sort of ever-changing tariff war that, especially with China right now, is going to be a punch in the gut for farm producers. You know, if you're growing soybeans right now, you may have had a bumper crop this year and nowhere to go with it because China stopped buying American soybeans this year for the first time in a long time. And there simply are not markets for what we're producing today as we get near harvest time. And, you know, farmers have paid their own dollars in these checkoff funds for decades that have gone into marketing programs to help establish these markets. They're being wiped away by a tweet from our president who decides with almost no evidence that we're going to just start these tariff wars. It's hugely disruptive. We're all going to be paying for it.
The problem is that we've had a Congress that has abandoned its duties as a co-equal branch of government to provide some oversight, some guidance and things like that. And so I want to talk to you after the break about, you know, the role that you think Congress should have if Democrats were to take control in the midterms for the second half of President Trump's term. What are the things that could be done if not working with the president, then at least putting forth, you know, a better slate of ideas than what we've seen and the damage that has been done to the economy right now. We're talking to Fred Clark, former state assembly rep, who is also now a candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District here up north. We'll have more with Fred Clark and some final news and notes from Lake Wissota coming up in just a bit. Again, remember you can follow my work over at upnorthnewswi.com. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Swing big at Big Fish Golf Club in Hayward, bringing you the goal for the green and gold. Text to win on WBZH, the Buzz of the North. Mention Big G and get $20 off your next round. Hurry, offer ends October 31st.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A step forward for clean energy in Wisconsin, the Public Service Commission has approved its first wind farm in 14 years. The Badger Hollow Wind Energy Center will be built in Iowa and Grant counties. At the same meeting, commissioners also approved a new solar farm in Walworth and Jefferson counties. It might be fall, but it sure doesn't feel like it. Some Wisconsin communities like Milwaukee have already seen record highs, and that's bad news for our fall colors. Experts with the Wisconsin State Climatology Office say warm fall nights mean more muted leaf colors. And yep, climate change is making our nights hotter and hotter. Right now on the Defender podcast, AI data centers are racing ahead in Wisconsin, but staggering energy and water demands raise serious questions. Tune in for an in-depth discussion on data center secrets at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Tom Tiffany, the Republican congressman representing Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, has finally made it official. He's running for governor. The election for governor in 2026 is the state's first open race for the office since 2010, and it's sure to invite many candidates to run. And on the Republican side, Tiffany's is the most significant announcement yet. There's a very good chance that he is going to be the Republican nominee for governor at this time next year. If that proves to be the case, it would signify a major shift in the center of power for Republican politics in Wisconsin. For so long, it's been the Wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, three of the counties that surround Milwaukee, that have been the Republican stronghold in the state. But if Tiffany is the one on the top of the ticket, it will be the most clear indicator yet of how the party has shifted from more of a suburban one to one where GOP voters are more centered in exurban or rural areas.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Remember, you can follow Up North News on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Blue Sky, and the Dumpster Fire, formerly known as Twitter. Where we've put the note that Fred Clark is a candidate for Congress now. The former state assembly rep is running in the 7th Congressional District up north, and we've been going over some of the issues that led Fred to decide to make this run for Congress, which will be an open seat now with Tom Tiffany running for governor. And we left off, Fred, talking about the Constitution, talking about the rule of law, talking about a Congress that, you know, for all of our lifetimes, even when it was of the same party as the president, still curbed any presidential excesses and provided some guardrails. And now we're seeing just a complete abdication of that oversight. How do you envision the role of Congress? First, if you were to win the majority next year in the second half of a Donald Trump term, But frankly, even if there were a Democratic president, talk more about your philosophy of what a member of Congress should actually be doing.
Yeah, well, all of us ought to take some time to read the Constitution. I reread it again this summer, and it doesn't take long to do, but the founders of this country, the framers of the Constitution, envisioned this sort of three-part government with the judiciary and the Congress and the executive branch being co-equal branches of government. And Congress actually should have most of the power in that relationship around how we run the federal government. And this year, our Congress has failed in most of that responsibility. You know, one is to budget funds for programs that are passed into law, along with the funding to support them. And the executive branch has a responsibility to fulfill those programs. This administration has failed to do that. And in fact, they've killed off entire programs that were congressionally authorized. That's wrong. Congress should stand up to oppose that. You know, this president's use of tariff power, which is only supposed to be an emergency authority for the executive branch, in creating this wild tariff war that changes daily depending on what the president may have had for breakfast in the morning. It's insane. It's making it impossible for businesses to invest with any stability of where their investment is going to return. And Congress has not stood up to stop that. I think what we have right now are, especially the Republicans in Congress, are basically running scared. They're afraid to stand up. They won't even oppose this administration on some of the most basic things because they're afraid of being tweeted at or attacked by this president. It's almost like you have to take a loyalty test to be in the Republican Party today. And that there's nothing more un-American than that.
Oh, it's not almost. I mean, we're just flat out right there at this point. Now, there is also the notion of border security and immigration, which are two things that are related, but you know they're not joined at the hip. You need to work differently on one than on another. And for example, in Wisconsin, we have such a reliance on migrant labor, especially on our farms, but also manufacturing and a host of other areas. And so when you've got a president with just a flat out anti-immigrant agenda, how do you address that while at the same time, you know, acknowledging that there is always room to improve security at our borders?
Yeah, it's such a complex issue, and it's so unfortunate that it's been beat into a political hot potato. And we absolutely need security at our border. And we need to be making smarter investments about that because a wall is not an effective form of really stopping illegal immigration. We can do that, and we need an aggressive, active role for federal law enforcement to go after lawbreakers, especially criminals. There's no question that needs to be a priority. But what's happening right now is that this administration and an entire segment of the Make America Great movement are demonizing immigrants across the board. And that is really harming hardworking, honest people who have come to this country to do important jobs that we need done because businesses need to hire them. They're supporting our economy, but importantly, they're also supporting families back home. And to see good, honest, hardworking people who want to be here legally hauled off of the streets and taken away without due process, or in many cases, deported to countries that aren't even their home country. That's morally wrong, and it's not making us safer.
We're talking to Fred Clark here, and just looking at some of the comments that have come in from PJ, the U.S. border is 1,500 miles away from Wisconsin. Let's worry about what's happening here in Wisconsin first. Adam says, I hope to see Fred Clark at the Three Lakes 4th of July parade next year. Tony says, please represent me. Joe on the text line in Superior says, Argentina is getting a $20 billion bailout from the Trump administration and taking our soybean market from American farmers. So literally taking our farmers $100 lunch money. And so there's more than a little bit of work that's going to be done, Fred, if you're able to capture this seat next year. Again, depending on who all gets in, there may be a primary next August to the general election in November of next year, with an open field for Democrats and Republicans alike. But you've made the decision to get in. You've outlined where your positions are on some of the issues. And I don't doubt we'll be having a lot of conversations between now and Election Day. Fred, thank you very much for joining us to make your announcement here on our program.
You bet, Pat. Thanks for having me. Thanks for being part of the kickoff today. And I'll look forward to seeing you again.
All right. Sounds good. And you can learn more about Fred's campaign at clarkforwi.com. That again is Clark, FORWI.com. And of course, he's got the Facebook page and everything else. And we'll continue to monitor this new race in the 7th Congressional District here up north. I'm Pat Kreitlow, hoping you enjoy the rest of your Wednesday as we get started with the month of October already. Hard to believe. Anyway, I'll be on the road tomorrow. I'll be checking in from new locations as I make the annual tour of daughters coming up. So I'll see you tomorrow morning from up north or somewhere, 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The federal government is shut down. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers now furloughed and not getting a paycheck. ABC's Rachel Scott covering developments in Washington.
The Department of Labor seeing 76% of its workforce temporarily reduced. At Health and Human Services, 41% of employees will be furloughed, including 64% of workers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Members of the military also hit hard, many forced to work without a paycheck.
The FBI, the CIA, air traffic controllers, and TSA agents are all continuing to work. Part of a New York City high-rise has collapsed, leaving a corner of the building a pile of rubble. No immediate reports of injuries. Firefighters say they were responding to a report of a gas explosion that collapsed the incinerator shaft in the Bronx. Rescuers desperately searching for any survivors after a strong earthquake in the central Philippines that left at least 69 people dead. This is ABC News.